Here we meet John. John is a weird-looking dude. He's got long, shaggy hair. He's wearing camel's hair as clothing with a leather belt around his waist. He's off in the middle of the desert eating locusts and wild honey. And yet, this weird-looking guy, who's off in the middle of nowhere, not in the city center, not in common places, has attracted quite a following. There's something about him that really enticed the people around him. And it's not because he cast miracles, because he cast none. He didn't heal anyone, he didn't bring fire down from heaven, he didn't do any big or profound events. He preached. That's all he did. He preached. By his words and what he was saying and how he looked, he enticed the people around him to come and see what was going on, and more importantly, to prepare. And so in this way, I want to wander through today's gospel by looking through the four different groups of people that were inspired by John or not, and how they reacted, as a way for us to understand where we're at as well. For the first group, it's not actually a group of people in today's gospel at all, because out of a population of about 1 million people across all of Israel, only maybe a couple thousand came to hear John preach. So where's the rest? That's the big question. The bulk majority of them never came. The bulk majority never heard him preach. They stayed where they were and were content. But why? The answer is very simple. The Roman government, having oppressed the people, but also let some people be fairly wealthy. So there's a great group of people who were very content with the way things were. They were content with obeying Roman law and doing what they asked. They're content with the income they've developed. They're content without God. They didn't need him. Life was fine without him. So what? They had to honor the gods. What difference did it make? And so the bulk of the people of Israel just didn't listen. They didn't care. Now, I don't think that's us. I think for us, we've moved past that stage. But for most of the world today, it's the same way. Lots of people don't feel any need for God. They feel like he's meaningless in their life, no more than an idea. And so they're content with their lives, maybe being worried about some trivial matters of the world or their own concerns, but largely are content. They deal with their things and they move on. But there's a second group. Now, the second group is a little tough because it's not technically in our gospel. Last week we started John's preaching, then we had an interlude, then we have today's reading, and then we continue with another part of John's preaching. So we started with John speaking out, saying, and quoting from the prophet Isaiah, "Behold, something is coming. I speak with a voice crying out in the wilderness that God is coming." And then we paused. Now in that pause, the Pharisees came. The Pharisees are the religious leaders of the time, and they came to see John. Now, why they came to see John is a totally different issue, because John did not treat them very nicely. He called them a brood of vipers and said that judgment is coming upon them, that they will crash and burn at his feet. Now, if I were being told that, I certainly wouldn't come. I'd be like, fine, I'm done. You do your own thing. We got the religious side of it. But they came for a reason. John represented something. And for more important reasons, they had to figure out how to deal with him. If the people were enticed by his preaching, they had to respond. Do they agree with him and tell the people, yes, listen to John, he's preaching the truth. He's saying what we need to hear. Or do they say, no, he's a heretic, condemn him and don't listen to his preaching? They had to figure out what to do, and they weren't sure. So they came to listen. But as they wandered down to the shore of the Jordan River, they didn't just comply, they stood at a distance. They didn't want to get close. They didn't want to feel connected with him. They wanted to stay enough away where they could hear but not have to do anything about it. This is where a lot of people are today. We like the idea of God. We like the fact he exists. We hope for something good, but we want our distance. We don't want to have to change. We don't want anything to be different. We want to have God, but not anything to do with him. And that's where the Pharisees are. They had their religious laws. They had their power given by the conflict between them and Rome, so they didn't want to lose it. Same works with us. Most of us more or less like our lives and don't want it to change. We don't want anything to be different. We want it to just be and everything to be fine. But now we have our third group. The third group comes in the gospel for today. These are the people who heard John preach, and some of them traveled a great distance. Some of them could have traveled up to 3 days' walk to hear John preach. Most of them came from Judea and the surrounding area, which should be about a 4 to 5 hour walk. As they're walking, they have to go down the river, down the mountainsides to the river, knowing that at the end of the day, they had to go back up. So it was quite a journey for them. It's not something simple, but there is something there. Hearing John preach brought them hope. Hope that this era of oppression would be over. Hope for a new start. Hope for a new life. Hope for something different. And that's what drove them to listen to John preach. And we see each of these groups, a very strange and eclectic group. We have soldiers, we have the crowds, we have tax collectors. We have this smattering of people. Everyone came from every walk of life. And they asked the same question, what should we do? They recognized that as John preached, that if the Messiah was to come, they had to be ready. It wasn't enough just to say, yay, God's here, he'll take care of everything. There's this level of preparation that had to happen. And so they asked the question, what should we do? John's answer is the same. Do what God has asked of you. Follow the Ten Commandments, treat people with respect, and live your lives well. Simple. And for them, they could easily stay that way. They didn't have to make major changes. They just had to conform their lives again, make those fundamental changes, and now they're ready. Yay, everything's good. This is where a lot of us are. We feel like in order to really be people of faith and to live well, we just do the basics of things and do the rest of our life and everything works out. Isn't that the way we hope things work? We make a few changes, feel good about them, move on, everything's happy-go-lucky. Here's the problem. Most of that group never encountered Jesus. And that's the shocking part. As we find out just in a few more verses, that the fourth group is the more important one. These are the ones that came down to the river, heard John preach, made some changes in their life, but more importantly, when John said, look, there's the Messiah, they followed. It was a small group, maybe a couple hundred, that when they heard John say that, behold the Lamb of God, they left everything and followed him. And therefore, they encountered the true and living God. That's what we want. But there's a challenge with it, and John makes his point very clear. You can't encounter God and think everything's going to be the same. Jesus came to radically transform our lives. As John preached, he said, I baptize you with water, but he will baptize you with the Holy Spirit and fire. This quenching, all-consuming fire, which burns through the depths of our souls, eliminating all that darkness and gloom and sorrow and pain. That's what God does. And then, like someone who wants to separate the wheat and the chaff, he throws up the wheat in the air and with a winnowing fan blows away all the excess stuff. God comes with power, and to encounter Jesus fully means radical change. It means we have to see things differently. Go back to that naked kernel of a wheat that says this is what's good. The rest of it has to go. That this God of mine needs to enter into the depths of my soul, not just be this idea, this figment of my imagination. These people truly encounter God. And this is what we want. If we were true to ourselves, the depths of our soul, we want to experience the true and living God, even if it causes us pain. Because we know it brings us new life. We know it brings us a new way of being. And that's what we desire. This hope, this faith, this trust that everything will work out. Because God is here with me. And so I challenge you. We have 2 weeks left of Advent, 2 weeks left of preparation. And yet most of the time when we think of preparing for Christmas, it's the same basic thing. We put up the same tree with the same ornaments. We have the same meal. We make the same decorations and cookies. We kind of have this pattern we fall into. And by doing so, when we get to Christmas Day and everything's prepared and done, all the things are set, we have our meal, and we just sit there and hang out for the day. Let's make Christmas something different. Let's change just a little this year to add time to encounter the true and living God. That as we spend these last 2 weeks, we think about what we ought to do on Christmas Day. Maybe it's we spend some time in prayer. Maybe we read through the infancy narrative in the Gospels, finding out what they say about Jesus and his birth. Maybe we watch a movie about Jesus' nativity, something different to turn us away from ourselves into the mystery of God. We focus so much on what we want and how we want things that we don't realize that God is speaking to us. He's come to be with us. He He wants us to encounter him and bring new life through him. So let us do things different, just a little different, so that when Christmas comes, it's not just a day of relaxation, but a day of realizing God is in our midst. He wants us. And by doing so, we realize that fourth group was so radically important because they encountered the true and living God and realized grace and truth came through Jesus Christ.